here. Better late than never, right? Landon and I got here and opened up, and I walked up here and realized it was 9 o'clock, and she and I are the only two here. I was like, wow, we may be, and she's tired of hearing me talk, so I didn't know what we were going to do, so I sure appreciate y'all showing up. All right, we're still in 1 Peter. Yeah. But I already ate my yogurt this morning, so I'd have had to watch her eat. So we're in 1 Peter chapter 4. Starting verse 1, it says, "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourself with the same way of thinking, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." So Peter is trying to garnish a mindset here, and that can be a confusing verse, that whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. I think that leaves itself open for possibly taking that a little bit out of context. But to finish out this thought in verse 2, "so as to live for the rest of time in the flesh, no longer for human passion, but for the will of God." And so Peter's making a case. He's trying to tie us as believers to Christ. And in the process of that, don't get hung up on this just flesh side. He's using that right now, but he's contradicting a mindset, if you will, that if we have a tendency to just live in the flesh, just to be flesh dwellers, what kind of life is that? What's that? Dead-ended? What else? Okay. If we're flesh livers, flesh dwellers, what does that look like? It's empty? Okay. It's really hard because y'all are all like in a line. I don't know. It's like, there's something about those seats. I hadn't figured it out yet, but I'm going to. Okay, well, we're not there yet, so I'm making you guess a little bit. Russ, were you going to say something back there? Okay. Okay. Melanie, were you going to say something too? Okay. Okay, very good. So Lana says the answer's in verse 3. We'll read that, but I really want to get back up into 1 and 2. It says, for the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking, parties, and lawless idolatry. And so be careful here. There's a couple things we need to be careful with here in this opening of chapter 4. Number one, we need to be careful with the end of with verse 1, it says, "Whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." Because who has suffered in the flesh? Everyone, right? Everyone has suffered in the flesh. Would you agree with that? I mean, to some magnitude, everyone has suffered in the flesh. Okay? And the other thing I want you to be careful with, when Peter references Gentiles here, it gets to be, particularly later in Scripture, this gets to be a term that is not necessarily referencing non-Jew. What might Peter be referencing here when he says Gentile? Okay, ungodly. It's a non-believer. Okay, because this letter is probably being read by Jew and Gentile. As far as our fleshly term of the reference of Jew and Gentile. So be conscious here that when Paul is referencing Gentile, he's referencing a lifestyle and a mindset of one without God. Okay, because we all know that through the history of time, you had with God and you had without God. And if you were without God, you were considered a Gentile. But Gentile, not in the term of Greek, not in term of, as we would be called Americans, and Germans would be, you know, people from Germany would be considered Germans. It's not in that reference. It's believing and non-believing. It's with God and without God. And so when we see here, whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. What kind of suffering do you think Peter's talking about there? Or what kind of point do you think he's making? Because I don't believe he's saying, hey, if you've suffered in the flesh, you've ceased to sin. Because have y'all ceased to sin? Don't have a lot of shaking arms and stuff, but had a lot of head shakes, right? But we've suffered. And so we need to reconcile these two concepts, because if you just read it and don't really dig into it, these don't make sense. Does that make sense? This doesn't make sense. Does that make sense? Because the reality is, we've suffered in the flesh, but yet we still struggle with what? Sin. And so Peter is trying to communicate a mindset here, all right? A mindset that's valuable for his reader. It's valuable for us today to grab a hold of and to take charge of. Because how does he start verse 1? Since therefore, right? Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. And so Peter is challenging his reader right here, not just to be consciously aware of Christ's suffering. Did Christ suffer? If you're not sure, do your head like this. All right, good. Everybody kind of sleepy this morning, huh? Yeah. I'm going to have to do some jumping jacks or something. I don't know. But he's trying to get them not to just acknowledge Christ's suffering. All right, you need to see that in the very first verse. Christ suffered in the flesh, so arm yourselves with what? The same way of thinking, okay? And so his challenge here in the first several verses isn't to be consciously aware of the suffering in the flesh. It's to be consciously aware of the mindset of Christ. And so what is the mindset of Christ? What's that? Live for God? What else? What else is the mindset of Christ? Because that's what he's really trying to draw to here. One of the best ways we learn is in the flesh, isn't it? I mean, if Landon and I had a little episode, I think it was last week. Yeah, I think it was last week. Where she ran into the door of her car with her head, and it didn't feel good. And I tried to make a joke about it, you know, I've done that a million times. That's my joke with Lana when she does something like, oh, I've done that a million times. But then, you know, a few days later, after I got my chuckles on that, I was trying to move a ladder in our kind of back behind the house, and it had one leg of it during the fall probably had sunk into the ground. Well, now it's covered in snow, and so I'm pulling on it, and this leg is frozen into the ground. And so I am just yanking on it with all I have. And it finally breaks free and comes back and hits me in the back of the head and about knocks me out. So it wasn't near as funny. Her thing wasn't near as funny anymore. But how do we learn in the flesh? Experience, right? I mean, because when we see something that creates pain, what do? We try not to do it again, right? We try not to do it again. And so, you know, I can tell you after I broke my elbow, about a year and a half ago, I can tell you that for the next year, I walked very gingerly. Okay, I watched my steps because, man, that hurt. And it took me 6 months to overcome that pain. And so we understand that. So Peter always likes to try to draw into the flesh for us to learn, because we learn best in the flesh. When you tell your little child not to touch a wood stove, what do they end up inevitably doing? Touching a wood stove, right? How many times? Once, because we understand that, don't we? We understand that in the flesh is suffering, and in suffering there's pain, and in pain we don't like to duplicate it. And so as a result, he wants us to understand first that Christ suffered. So he's trying to help us understand and appreciate the fact that Christ wasn't exempt from suffering. I think that's a very important point of reference for us to appreciate and understand about Christ. Christ didn't just come down here and have a little bubble around him. He wasn't wrapped in bubble wrap, where everything that he walked around, he was protected from by God. No, he suffered like we suffered. And not only did he suffer like we suffered, he suffered to an extreme that we probably won't ever experience. So he suffered, but in the suffering, there's a mindset of Christ. What was Christ's mindset? Regardless of suffering, what was Christ's mindset? The Father's will. loving one another. It was on the things, you know, Melanie, you kind of drew a point of this heavenly and earthly story. Christ's mindset was always on the Father. Where's the Father? Heaven. And so regardless of what happens down here in the flesh, and though we have immense suffering at times as people, the reality is what made him different in the midst of his suffering was his mindset on God. And so when he tells us, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking, he's saying, hey, don't get caught up in this fleshly struggle, but come to a place in your life where you realize, and this is important, come to a place in your life where you realize that it's not about what happens down here. It's not about what happens down here. It's about what happens with my relationship and my connection to the Father. So regardless of the suffering, if I can get that mindset, need you to hear this, because this is the point he's making at the tail end of verse 1. If I can have that mindset where I am no longer looking to the things of the flesh, both positively and negatively, but no, it no longer affects my existence, it no longer controls my steps. If I can get to, if I can arm myself with the same style and type of thinking that Christ Jesus armed himself with, then sin no longer has its place in me. Would you agree with that? If I arm myself with the thinking of Christ, does sin have a place in that? It doesn't, does it? But what he's trying to get us to understand in the flesh is, if we, you know, how many of us are manipulated by the flesh? I mean, in anything. I mean, you know, I got fat over the last 20 years. And so now I'm trying to manipulate it by exercising a little bit. All right? We constantly are trying to do things in the flesh to manipulate what? The flesh. Monday, something's going to happen in each of your worlds that's going to cause you to make a decision. And that decision, if it is based and rooted in the flesh, might lead to what? Another decision. And another decision. And it just never ends, does it? And so we have, you know, in parenting, and regardless of what it is, in your marriage, in parenting, in your workplace, in church life, if we're constantly bouncing around by what the flesh demands, we're going to constantly be in error. Do y'all see that? I mean, do you see the reality of that? That if we're just bouncing around one decision to the next, it's going to be very difficult to do. And so what he's trying to do is what he's trying to get his reader to do is anchor themselves to the mindset of Christ. Because then the things that are happening in the flesh no longer manipulate your steps. Because the reality is our steps are often manipulated by things that happen to us in the flesh, don't they? You're going to do something Friday as a direct result of something that happened Tuesday. Or am I the only one that does that? I'm the only one. So I was starting to think that for a second. But if we have the mindset of Christ, what's manipulating our steps? Not this down here. Right? This stuff's not manipulating our steps. And so as a result, whether suffering or in great times, what's my mindset? I'm in his will. It's the mindset of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 18. I think that's right. For everything that we see with our physical eyes is temporary. But what is unseen is eternal. It's how are we anchoring our lives? And Peter is challenging his reader, whoever's reading this letter during that time and today, is challenging his reader. Listen, so you've suffered. Christ did. Big deal. Don't allow that to manipulate your steps. So you've had good times. Big deal. Don't allow that to manipulate your steps. Allow the faith that you have in God to control and direct and guide to the direction of your life. Because if you do that, will it exempt you from suffering? If you're not sure, do your head like this. And that's his point. Christ wasn't exempt from suffering. And every step he took, not just a couple of them, every step Christ took was directed by God. yet he suffered. So whether I'm walking in faith or not doesn't have a direct result or correlation to my existence in the flesh. And sometimes we need to get that. And the reason I say we need to get that, you know, and I'm going to talk to the briefly just to the young parents, which are sitting all right back there. Because I think it's important that one of the most positive things that you can instill in your kids is that faith in God is not about what's happening today. It's not about the struggle of today or the success of tomorrow. It's not about that. It's a consistency of a relationship with God in spite of what's going on around you. Because so many, and I see this so often, and I think that's why I'm kind of picking on the three of y'all back there, is because I don't just see this in kids, I see it in adults of all ages, but I particularly see it in kids at Blue Haven, that they have attached their faith to what's happening around them in the flesh. If things are good, God loves me. If things are bad, God doesn't love me. I mean, I think it leads to a lot of the suicides that we have today, and it leads to a lot of people and kids stepping away from God because they feel like that God is not pleased with them. And it's so painful to watch because we have bought, you know, if I asked you a question today, here's the funny thing. It's not funny, but it's a little funny. It's one of my dark humor things. If I asked you if you enjoy prosperity gospel, what would you say? Like Joel Osteen, you know, prosperity gospel. Anybody in here like prosperity gospel? If not, shake your head no. So we can identify that term, right? That, oh, yeah, prosperity gospel is a negative. But so many of us live that way. Not from a monetary place necessarily, but from a what's good for me place. From a I can't believe this. And you know, so this I'm going to pull back to everyone here. So many of us judge our lives and our existence with God based solely on what's happening in the flesh. I spent half my life doing that. Two-thirds of my life doing that. That what's going on in my existence today in the flesh is a direct correlation towards whether God's pleased with me or not. And that is never a way to judge whether God loves you or not. Because the reality is, if that's what we do, and if that is how our minds process things, is there anyone that would love God? Would Christ love God if he viewed it that way? No, because he suffered. And in the midst of his suffering, if he said, man, God doesn't love me, where would we all be today? So he's saying, arm yourself with the mindset of Christ. The mindset of Christ says, I'm not going to judge my relationship with God based on the physical things that are happening in the flesh. I'm going to judge my relationship with God based on the promises that he has already given me. Based on the facts that he has already proven to me. Based on the love that he has already shown me. I'm going to base my existence with that. And the more I can base my existence with the mindset of Christ, the more the flesh is not going to manipulate who I am. That doesn't mean you're not going to struggle. It's no longer going to mean that it's going to affect you the same way. I gave a homework assignment, and I know Monty read it because he texted me. I gave a homework assignment last week to read, and I think he told me it was in Acts 25. Is that right? 27. Did you read it too, Melanie? What'd you think of that? Did you see it? It's pretty evident, isn't it? So if you see, y'all are looking at me confused because you guys have been out of school so long, you haven't done homework in a long time. But I asked you to read about Paul's journey to Rome and how he is in the same circumstances, ultimately shipwrecked. He's in the same circumstances as everyone that's on that boat. They're all struggling. But there was something fundamentally different about Paul. What was it, Melanie? Did he suffer? Was he hungry? Was he sick? He was all of those things along with everyone else. But did he offer hope to those people? He did. Why? Because his mind wasn't on their current circumstances. His mind was on not only his eternity, but their eternity. And it was fundamentally different because he wasn't living a life based on the circumstances of the flesh. He was living a life based on the circumstances of the promises that God has already given. Something profound in that text is Paul already knew from God what? Did you pick up on that? They were all going to live. Why? How did he know that? Because he knew that he was supposed to go where? Rome. Paul knew. Paul had already been warned through the Spirit. Yeah, it's one of the more fascinating, maybe I'll do that sermon sometime, interesting things that you can kind of plot and see that Paul, warned through the Spirit, knows that he's going to be arrested, but yet proceeds because he is told that he has to appeal before Caesar, that he has to go to Rome. One of them is a guy takes Paul's belt and says the owner of this belt will be bound and arrested. And so though warned by the Spirit, Paul knows that God's intention for him is to be in Rome. And so when he is in the middle of this mess on the boat, what does he still know? God wants me to go to Rome. What does that mean for me right now? I'm going to live. But what is profound about that is Paul puts all of his existence into the promises of God. He doesn't put them on the circumstances. He puts them in on the promises of God. How many times have you told a kid to jump, "Don't worry, I'll catch you"? Aaron, you probably do that, right? Or have, right? How does mama feel about that? Yeah. All right. So, Aaron, how do you feel about that? And the mindset of a child, and it's interesting to me because, man, I used to do that with my boys. And I can remember when they were super young, man, they'd just step off with 100% trust that dad was going to catch them, right? But I can also remember, and this is interesting, I can also remember when the step became a hesitant step. I can also, and it wasn't that they didn't trust me, but they were more aware and consciously aware of the dangers that surrounded the jump. They were more conscious of the, what if dad doesn't catch me? And I can remember when the step went from an easy step out to a step of hesitancy. To a step of not quite certain. And see, that's what happens when the world and the flesh manipulates us as Christians. It goes from I trust God's promises and I trust Him completely with my existence to, but look at the danger. We allow sin and we allow the world to creep into the mindset of God. And all of a sudden, we don't share the mindset of Christ totally. We share a little bit of the mindset of Christ, a little bit of mindset of the world, because the world says that's scary. The world says that's dangerous. And we quit trusting the promises that we know. And so let me challenge y'all this morning as we move a little bit further into chapter 4, that this is a mindset that Peter is trying to get us to understand. And he's trying to use the flesh as an example. But if you get hung up in the flesh of this text, you're going to miss one of the most important teachings in this text. As Lana said in verse 3, for the time is past, that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking, parties, lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you don't join them in the same flood of debauchery, but they malign you. They will give account to him who is ready to judge the living for the dead. For this is why the gospel was preached, even to those who are dead, that they, though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the Spirit the way God does. All right, we have a lengthy list of nasty stuff here, right? If you're not sure, do your head like this. All right, what's our list? Sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. What is all of that? Besides sin, I know that. But what's he saying here? Why does he feel the need to give this list? What's that? Okay, that's worldly living. What else is it? Because I see something a little bit deeper than just worldly living here. Because here's the reality. And there's no judgment coming from up here. All right? I need you to hear that. To some degree, most of us have lived in some of this. Including myself. Some of this list, at some point in time in your life, maybe a reality that you experienced in your life. I'm not going to pretend that it wasn't in mine. I'm not going to pretend that at all. So what is Peter trying to say in this list? Because don't lose connection, all right? Don't lose context here. Please don't lose context here. Because how many people suffer in the flesh? Everyone suffers in the flesh, right? Everyone suffers in the flesh. And to the Christian, he's saying, adopt the mindset of Christ, because that's going to help. That's going to help you in the midst of your suffering. Do y'all see that? That's going to help you in the midst of your suffering. It's going to help you realize that it's not just about this fleshly suffering. There's something bigger. And as a result of there being something bigger, it's going to help us to be able to sustain the suffering. Because again, it's not saying if you adopt the mindset of Christ, you're going to be exempt from suffering. It's saying quite the opposite. Adopt the mindset of Christ because there is suffering. So the mindset of Christ is supposed to help us in our suffering. Very good. Very well, you guys are on. Well, you're still kind of sleepy, but you're getting close, right? Well, you're getting warmed up. So he says, but don't have the mindset of a Gentile. Again, we talked about what does Peter mean by Gentile? It's one without God. And one without God has what? Suffering. And how do they cope with it? Oh, let's look at a list. Living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, lawless idolatry. How do they deal with their sufferings? By putting a Band-Aid on it. Because what is in our flesh, when we experience something negative, what do we now want to experience to overcome the negative? Something positive. Right? Every time. When we've had this negative experience, what do we long for the most? The positive experience, right? And so is there ways to mask suffering in the flesh? If you're not sure, do your head like this. There is. And so he's not just merely giving a naughty list here. He's trying to show his reader, listen, it's where you find your peace. And how many times do we know, and we've seen it or we've experienced it, we know someone, we love someone that's been in this place, that they have given themselves up to the struggles of life. They said, I'm done. I'm done fighting. I'm done. And where does that lead? Oftentimes that list. Why? It's a Band-Aid. And something we can't overcome is our wiring. No matter how hard we try, something we cannot overcome is our wiring. And our wiring says, the way we're made up, our wiring says, when something negative happens, I have to calm that storm. What did Adam and Eve do in the garden when they came to the realization that they had violated the command of God? They hid. They covered themselves. They covered themselves with because they realized and were aware of their nakedness. When we struggle and suffer in the flesh, we become aware of how small we are. And in the awareness of how small we are, we desire to cover it up. We desire to experience something sensual. We desire to cover it up with drunkenness. We desire to cover it up with the appearance that everything's okay. When the reality is, What we long for the most is somebody to put a salve on our suffering. Want to heal us from the afflictions of this life. And so he's not just giving a list to stay away from. He's giving you a list of what life looks like when you try to remedy the suffering of life with life. It's the same thing. God, man, I appreciate Melanie. I appreciate you bringing up that story because, man, now my mind is popping there a lot. Because one of the things that I said in that study, I don't know, how many years ago was that? Was that what should we take away from the Noah story? God flooded the whole earth, right? Because of what? Because it was corrupt, right? It was corrupt. And it saved one man, his four boys, and their family, right? Not sure, do you have like this? Or is it three boys? I think it was four. And then the first scene that we get after the waters have receded is what? Sin. Do y'all remember what I told you we should know because of that? That the remedy for sin can't come from down here. It's got to come from up there. And he proved it with the flood. I can wipe out all the unrighteousness and leave the righteous one. And it's still there. How many of y'all get a spot on your dress or something like that? And you get most of it out. Lana does this sometimes. She gets a spot on something. Like a spot. I'm going to pick on her today because she told me the other day I hadn't been picking on her enough. She'll get a little spot on her pants, you know, and then she goes to great effort to get that spot off. I mean, this thing gets the 17-step process prior to the washing machine because she's going to great lengths to get it off. And it doesn't quite come out. You know, I mean, not quite, but the reality is there's only one person that knows it's there. Who is it? I mean, it could be so faint that there's not a single person on the face of the earth that's going to see that spot, but she knows it's there. What does that do? What does that do to our mindset? It bugs you, right? And so it doesn't matter how the world's going to see us. It doesn't matter how the people in this congregation see us. If there's that one spot in your life that you just can't rub out, that you just can't quite get to fade away, what does it do? It eats at you. Bugs you, doesn't it? Nobody else can see it, but you know it's there. You know it's there. And that's because there isn't a remedy for it. You can't try and work hard enough to fix it in the flesh. Adopt the mindset of Christ. Because he is the righteousness. And if we live that way, we're no longer burdened by that spot that's on our britches. We're not burdened by that. We don't live based out of that fear. We live out of a mindset of Christ that there is going to be sin, there's going to be struggle, but my eyes are on the Creator, the author and perfecter, because if I have a relationship with Christ, as a bonus, what else do I get? A relationship with the Father. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool that my relationship with Christ means that I, by default, have a relationship with God? That was all extra. Now we'll get into class. Aaron, who's in charge of ringing? You, Russ, you ringing the bell today? What time do we ring it? Because when I know when you're in charge, you forget. Yeah, 20 till. Yeah, that was kind of my point. So I'm trying to be considerate to the preacher this morning, allowing him to have enough time to preach a sermon. So let me just finish this little section, then we'll be done this morning. For this is why the gospel was preached even to those who are dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might, and here's the key to this text, they might live in the Spirit the way God does. Peter is challenging his reader not to live in the flesh. We by default must live a life in the flesh, but my life needs to be regarded as sacred in the Spirit. My life is a direct reflection of God's Spirit. And I'm going to choose to connect myself to that way of thinking, that way of living, because then my faith isn't attached to the circumstances of the flesh. My faith is attached directly to the promises that God has given me. And that looks different. If I can rest and trust in the promises that God has made known, these aren't mysteries anymore. But if I can trust in those things and understand that those are the reality of my existence, of my eternity, that my life in the flesh, in spite of suffering, in spite of good times, is going to look much differently, as in Paul's did when he was on his way to Rome. It's going to look different. Because I am trying to arm myself, as verse 1 says, with the mindset of Christ. So this morning, let's arm ourselves with the mindset of Christ. It will not disappoint, and I guarantee you it will not fail you. The rest of this stuff will. All right. Have a good morning.